Welcome to the Business of Health podcast, your go-to resource for practical insights on managing employee benefits and lowering healthcare costs. I'm your host, Mike Martins, and together we'll uncover strategies to enhance price stability and optimize your company's health benefits. Let's dive into the world of healthcare economics and tackle the challenges of the business of health. Well, welcome back to another episode of Business of Health. I got to tell you, I think we've got a great topic today, and we've got a guest that certainly is qualified to address some of the issues that we're going to be talking about, because we're going to be discussing something that most of us will likely have to deal with at some point in our lives, maybe with a parent, a relative, a sibling, or ourselves. And of course, we're talking about aging, and particularly a concept called aging in place. Our guest today is Dr. Shar Hugh, who is the co-founder and CEO of a Texas company called the Helper Bees. Dr. Hugh, welcome to the Business of Health.
Thanks, Mike. I'm excited to be here, and I'm excited for the conversation.
Well, let's kind of start today. If you would share a little bit about your background and how you moved into this space that you have so successfully worked in.
I guess you have to go way back. I was a scientist. I loved physics. I wanted to solve some big problems with physics, and biophysics was one of the areas that I think was showing a lot of promise. So turns out I wasn't as great at physics as much as I loved it. And so my research days were short-lived after I defended my thesis. And I was using supercomputers to study how proteins interact with molecules that include drug molecules and solutions, but also with itself. And I say that because we think Alzheimer's has this misfolding problem, which causes the downstream dementia that you see so prevalent nowadays. As luck would have it, even though I was a bad scientist, I had a heart for long-term care driven by my grandmother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. So all of my late 20s, I was trying to figure out how to run long-term care facilities. My family ended up, because of the experience caring for my grandmother, really wanted to do something unique and something in her legacy. I had no idea how to do long-term care. I had no idea how to care for older adult. I had one a sample size of one. That was my grandmother. It was very different. So cut my teeth in the late 20s, all through my 30s, and gradually started to understand this sort of quirky industry that's a combination of just a really strong emotional connection with the challenge, as well as infrastructure challenges. And you can see this intersection play out daily with some of the folks that we served.
Well, and I think anyone, because I've walked in these shoes, that has dealt with an aging parent or relative, particularly with dementia, it can be a very frustrating experience. And when we look at the way we care for our aged population, we're certainly not where we want to be, but we're light years ahead of where we were 50 years ago. I was fortunate enough to know both of my great-grandmothers, and they lived in what was referred to as a home. And the home was kind of the repository for anyone that really couldn't care for themselves, regardless of what the problem was, whether it was mental, physical, or a combination of the two. So this is why I'm excited about this episode, because I've been down that path, and I know it can be frustrating and it can be painful. And there are times when you feel like, I don't know what to do, and I'm not even sure where to go. Let's talk about this for a minute, this aging market. How many people fall into that category, Sharon, and how quickly is it growing? I mean, when you look at the boomer population, and I'm going to make an assumption that generally the boomers are the first ones to move into some level of care for aging. I know that's not always the case, but how big is this, and what direction is it headed?
I mean, it's massive. So, I mean, you hit on a few really important topics. First, the U.S. Census has shown just very recently, I think within the last week or so, average age in the U.S. is older than it's ever been. There was a pretty significant jump that feeds into the baby boomers driving quite a bit of that. So you have 80 million Americans can be over the age of 65 in just a handful of years. That growth rate is just accelerating. I like to say, when you think of a curve, we're just now entering that steep part of the population curve. But you notice when I say baby boomers are older adults, 65 and above, what's interesting from at least within the US, it's you and I likely don't think 65 as needing long-term care or needing to age in place. 65 is quite young in our mind. And this is a new construct in our minds here within the US. I mean, it's been since 1960, life expectancy has grown by 20 years, just since 1960. And so now consumer demands and our take on what it means to age in place or what it means to be an older adult is dramatically different. So it's lucky you got to know your great grandparents. Now I think that's going to be more and more common, and they're going to be active and they're going to have new consumer demands, if we put in that parlance. And so just to summarize, massive shift in age of the US, but also shift in the experience and what it means to age as we start to have more and more new technologies and services that are brought forth.
For those who have not dealt with this situation yet, what are some of the big caregiver challenges? And I know this is a very broad question and we may want to drill it down, but what are some of the caregiver challenges for aging parents or relatives?
There are a myriad, as you hit. I think some of the biggest ones, though, in our experience as a company, but also me personally, as I help other friends and families, is what do you do? And when I mention this, that this is new, it's even though I helped care for my grandmother, it's a tiny amount, my mom did the bulk majority when I was a teenager, it's the landscape is so different now. And navigating this landscape is really, really challenging. So I think one of the biggest challenges that creates quite a bit of caregiver stress, whether you're the oldest adult child or whether you're the spouse, is what do I do first and who do I go to for help?
Yes.
Because typically aging is this really interesting thing. I know this is a healthcare podcast, but usually, you know, you go to your physician if you have an ailment or a need. My joint starts hurting. I've gained weight. I'm losing weight. But when you're aging, it's really not a medical problem. And so the solution tends to live outside the medical or healthcare ecosystem. And so then it makes it really hard to figure out what do I go and do. Luckily, within the last 2-3 years, that has been improving at a rapid pace. But that's one of the biggest things that most caregivers struggle with. It's just what we call in our industry, just coordination of care. And care is no longer medical care. It's quite a bit of these non-medical services.
We already touched on Alzheimer's. Let's take a minute and talk about some of the advancements that you have seen in dealing with that disease, because anyone that has dealt with that with a family member, it's absolutely heartbreaking. How are we improving on the diagnosed treatment and care for Alzheimer's?
Well, let's focus on the positive side. I would say, I'll answer your question here in a second, but I think the biggest advancement we have made within the US is just awareness. It's being able to now talk about it in a way that is respectful of the individual and is also forward thinking. All too often, many years ago, even a decade ago, there was a lot of shame associated with the disease.
Yes.
And I think that drove people inward and that exacerbated the problem. We haven't gotten, our therapeutics aren't much better. There's been a lot of ink that's been spilled around some of the new FDA approved drugs and maybe the varying degrees of efficacy. There are some in the pipeline that are showing really great promise, but we'll have to see what happens once they further through clinical trials. So we don't have great therapeutics. We don't have great medication, but we have is great support networks. We have great individuals who are talking about it and who are casting a light on that. And so although we're not advanced in our clinical response to the disease, we really are on supporting those individuals who are going through it, as well as those that are directly providing care.
Absolutely, because the caregivers all too often are, from my personal experience, are the ones that kind of take the brunt a lot of times when you're dealing with that disease. Let's take a second and talk about the financial aspect of aging and aging in place, because I know that most people are aware that, because it's been around now for quite some time, long-term care insurance is a great tool to assist in offsetting some of those costs. And we're going to talk about Plan C Medicare here in a minute. But, and again, this is a really broad question, but for someone that is somewhat advanced in aging, what does it cost a month to take care of that person?
Yeah, this is an area that's going to be a big challenge. As we talked about at the outset of the episode, just this massive demographic boom that's falling with probably the largest transfer of wealth the U.S. has ever seen. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that wealth is going to go towards care. We've seen, like many things post-pandemic, labor wages for those in the caring economy have just skyrocketed. And many would say that's good. That was a good thing for us. And I am one of those. I think that was a really promising development for those who are delivering direct care. We see home care agency rates across the U.S. This is part of the Helper Bees, where we accumulate quite a bit of data, increased by 30 to 35% over the last few years. It's a pretty significant increase in care. But if we put in the dollar cents, on average, if you're going through a home care agency, there's a wide geographic spread. But on average, you'll probably look at about $28 to $30 an hour for an in-home caregiver. Again, a lot of constraints around that.
Sure.
From an assisted living facility, you're going to see anywhere between $4,000 and $7,000 a month mm-hmm. in care. If you want to specialize in dementia care, that's going to shift up between $6,000 and even $12,000 a month when it comes to dementia-specific care. Skilled nursing facilities, which is historically, as you mentioned early in the podcast about the home, that's a skilled nursing facility. Those can be in the $10,000 to $12,000 a month range yes. as well. One thing to think about is, hey, well, you know, I want my loved one to remain at home, or I want myself to remain at home. 24/7 home care is incredibly expensive. It could be up between $12,000 and $15,000 a month. And this is all non-medical expenses. You typically have to layer on your clinical or your medical expenses on top of that.
Yeah. So really what we're talking about with those numbers is what in my industry we refer to as custodial care.
Right.
It's not having an RN or a physician involved. It's having someone in the home to make sure that everything stays safe and meds are taken and food is prepared and eaten and just that custodial level of scenario. Well, let's shift and talk about the helper bees a little bit. What were some of the early challenges when you started the company that you faced? Did those challenges change your corporate direction at all?
Well, as an early stage company, there were no shortage of challenges. I'll tell you that. We really started wanting to build our company for large payers, large carriers. So you already hit on long-term care insurance. That was one that we wanted to work with. Given our experience in our long-term care facilities and our home health agencies, we had a lot of experience, you know, with private long-term care as well as veterans benefits and private pay and Medicare. Mm-hmm. And we knew that while a lot of people were thinking about post-acute care, this was still very popular in healthcare. Not a lot of folks were thinking about long-term care that in the custodial aspect, as you mentioned. This is a big problem, but it's almost like it was healthcare adjacent, which you might have been on a different planet at the time.
Like it's right. Just,
right. Everyone knew it was important, but didn't know how to tap into it and said, as an early company, they go, oh yeah, that's really important. Have no idea how to tie you into our solution. So we swung and missed quite a bit with large carriers, large providers. So early on, we went and built our product direct to consumer. So we went to the consumer. It turned out to be actually quite lucky for us to have taken that pathway. We talked to a lot of older adults. We talked to a lot of older adults across the U.S. We talked to a lot of caregivers, and we developed our first product, which was using personality to find great in-home caregivers. We developed it by just speaking to hundreds and hundreds of older adults and their caregivers, which was enlightening even to me when I, again, cut my teeth in late 20s and all through the 30s talking to older adults around their dementia care. But now we saw this huge geographic spread and saw the commonality across. So that was one challenge, which was everybody loved our idea early on, but we didn't have a product. We didn't have customers and they wouldn't want to do a deal with me. Turns out they were pretty smart. So we went straight to, we totally really took a different tack and learned a lot in the process. And that's been the story for us to this day, where we would come upon a barrier. We apply ourselves as sort of learners, understand what the user really, really needs, pressure test that against our product, and then develop something that actually solves a real problem for multiple actors. And that's what you had said earlier as well, which is the insidious thing about just aging and long-term care issues is that it usually doesn't just affect that individual. It affects an entire community of people around them. And so the solution really should solve for multiple needs as well.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into the evolution of that product scenario, because I know that you now do a lot of work with long-term care insurance carriers. You still have an individual model that is available. When you began to focus on attaching your model to the long-term care carriers, what were some of those challenges? What were they looking for? And what was their hotspot where they said, wow, we got to work something out with this man?
Yeah, it was early on. I learned a valuable lesson when you're doing business development or any sort of selling into large enterprises or doing product development. My first presentation to a very large carrier was meant to bring population health, bring great risk analytics, but also managed care into long-term care to help individuals age at home. I knew this had a big financial impact on long-term care carriers. This was about six, seven years ago. Well, that executive actually just really wanted our mobile app, which was like slide 26. It was like a throwaway slide, like, hey, we use a mobile app to billing. And for us, it was just table stakes.
Yeah.
I learned a really valuable lesson. This is a massive Fortune 100 company, and they wanted our mobile app to file claims because the status quo was just everything was on paper. So what that did is it unlocked this whole world of long-term care insurance claims processing, which is all paper-based. So we wanted to come in, do great analytics, target an individual, and wrap a bunch of non-medical services around the individual. But we couldn't get step one done because the data wasn't accessible to us.
Okay.
So we did this large, we started developing digital products then. So we digitized from that mobile app. We grew to digitizing facility claims and the nursing eligibility assessments and multiple bits during the entire claims process. And then 2 years ago, so fast forward 5 years, we finally now get to do exactly what we were wanting to do in day one, which was use data, stratify risk, and wrap a bunch of great non-medical services around the individual.
And obviously, you have been very successful with that as you continue to grow. Let's take a minute and talk about outcomes, because obviously, you know, when I put my insurance hat on, and I was never an underwriter, thank goodness, but I know that outcomes are incredibly important in that scenario. Share with me some of your success stories as it pertains to outcome.
We ran one of the first, if not the first, what I will say looks very much like a longitudinal study. The sample size is smaller than one if you would want to run a large academic study, but it was one of the first that used a control group and a treatment group on multiple planes to identify and understand the transition rate from a home care setting into a long-term care facility.
Okay.
That long-term care facility is important because it wasn't just skilled nursing. It was assisted living, IL, and memory care. And so this was we structured all the data. We had a control and a treatment. We tracked them for about 18 months. We saw in one population, by month 14, the treatment group where we were providing our provider networks and our care management techniques were able to stay in their homes 1 month longer on average.
Wow.
This is a shocking amount given that the program wasn't running for that long. We weren't running the programs for multiple years. And the reason we can make an effect so quickly, this is my hypothesis, is these individuals were already well into their journey, meaning that they already needed quite a bit of help with their activities of daily living, bathing, dressing, and grooming. We were able to put services in place in a very short amount of time, improves their ability to remain at home to a fairly significant degree. And so for me, that's like one of the metrics that matters more than the financial results. And we've got a lot of financial results. It's we could let somebody stay at home for a month longer out of 13. And that's pretty significant.
That's very significant because I guess I am a senior because I'm almost 68 years old, but I think this concept of being able to stay in my home and make sure that my family has the resources they're going to need to care for me. I was going to say deal with me, but to care for me. They'll tell you immediately they don't have any resources to deal with me, but to care for me is huge because I've got to believe, and I don't know if this has been studied or measured, but I've got to believe that people are consistently going to do better in their home than in a, and this may not be the best term, in an institutional setting.
Yeah, I'm coming as a facility guy. I will say that's right. There are definitely those individuals who need to go to a long-term care facility.
Mm-hmm.
That is
absolutely
the safest. In fact, in our dementia communities, we actually saw an increase in quality of life. And the reason is because usually they're coming from a home care setting with one unpaid caregiver, perhaps a spouse, who's also older and is just not able to bring in everything a full supporting cast can. And I would, when I would lead support groups, I would hear this often, which would be like the spouse within the first 2 months comes to our support group and said, you know, my loved one, they're doing great. They never used to do this at home. And I would tell them, we get to go home. We have our weekends. You didn't. And so you have yes. now, we've replaced that person with maybe 14, 15 other full-time individuals. And so for those, especially when there's falls and significant risk and safety issues, long-term care facilities, beautiful ones, and they're wonderful with heartfelt individuals. What you're alluding to, the vast majority of us, though, want to only go there when we have to, not because there's artificial conditions that make us have to go prematurely. And that's where you actually hit on something that is important as we start to think about either human-centered design or just aging in place in general, which is some people are hesitant to receive quote-unquote care. They don't want things thrust upon them. They right. want to select what happens to them. We have to factor in this idea of choice, the idea of dignity of like, I don't want to do that. And that's okay. That's incredibly stressful, though, on the caregivers. And we have to understand that as well. But I think as we increase this dialogue, like episodes like this, as we start to think about what it means, how do I want to remain at home? What are the things that I want to, and open a dialogue with our loved ones? That's the way that we're going to be able to really change this paradigm to say, what does aging in place actually mean? Well, I think it means aging well within the location that you want to choose.
Right. And I have to say that from my personal experience, when you talk about particularly a memory care unit, one of the things that is, I think, frequently overlooked by the family is that these are trained professionals that deal with this every single day. Dealing with it with a family member, it may be a one and done deal. And you just don't have the resources that are available in those types of facilities. And they know and understand the disease better. I probably shouldn't say better than the physician community, but you know, they're dealing with it every single day, 24/7, 365. And I certainly encourage anyone who is listening to the show and they're going through this scenario with a loved one, boy, don't be afraid to ask for help. Because the one thing that I did learn in this entire process of going through this personally was the amount of stress and the workload that it puts on that caregiver. It's just, it's immeasurable. And there are resources out there to help. We're starting to run out of time, Dr. Hugh. What have we not talked about? What else should we put out on the table today?
You came up on a concept that I wanted to dive in just a little bit deeper, which is the payment side of things. So
yes.
The most common question we get, even at my community and even within the helper bees, is it's not really common. It's more of a statement. Medicare doesn't pay for this? The question mark with an exclamation point.
Yes.
And it's shocking that even to this day, a lot of individuals, because Medicare has done such a wonderful job with comprehensive healthcare, and again, a lot of folks will equate aging with a healthcare or a medical issue, they assume Medicare is going to cover a long-term care facility, a caregiver. And it's you can hear the shock on the other end when we say, no, not at all. That's where I think we mentioned Medicare Part C, Medicare Advantage plans. Within the last 3 years, they're not paying for long-term care. So I don't want to say they are, but they've really expanded their offering to include a lot of those custodial services that we mentioned. So meals, groceries, transportation, a little bit of in-home caregiving, and not every plan has it. But the fact that the door has been cracked open for Medicare to now cover some of these services, ostensibly they're for, let's say, a post-acute event or very highly chronically ill individuals to help them with their quality of life, because we know downstream that has quite a bit of an effect on medical and healthcare outcomes. But I do think that opening of the door is really interesting, because as our population ages, these custodial services are going to become more and more important. And the fact that Medicare Advantage plans identify that is really actually encouraging. It's encouraging that we've identified these benefits are not just flashy. They are making big impacts on healthcare outcomes and the quality of life of individuals. And I'm pretty excited to see where this goes. I think that this could really shift how older adults remain at home and the services that are needed, or more specifically, the access to the services that they need to do that very well.
I could not agree with you more, because I do know that there is a huge number of not only just Medicare recipients, but the families of Medicare recipients that have no concept that these custodial level services, you don't have any coverage for this. You don't have any coverage for custodial care in a long-term facility. Yes, Medicare will pay a certain number of days after a hospitalization. But again, and we've brought this up two or three times, the real yardstick here is everything that's involved on the custodial side. Yes, there are aging people who have more physical issues than mental issues. But if it's a situation of someone who, whether it's dementia, whether it's Alzheimer's, you're really kind of on your own. So I'm with you. I am elated to see that some of these Advantage plans are beginning to address that. And I think it will open the door and broaden that level of service. Well, Dr. Hugh, I really, really appreciate you coming and spending some time with us today. I think we've covered a lot of significant information. I applaud you for what you're doing and the space you're doing it in. And I don't say that as an old guy. I say it as a consumer. We have to keep the pedal down on continuing to expand these services and getting the outcomes that we know will be there if people will access them. One of the things that we always have happen when we launch the podcast is I get emails saying, hey, why didn't you ask Dr. Hugh this? Or I would like to learn more about that. How do they get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can just send me an email. I'm pretty good at keeping on up with my inbox, and it's just char@thehelperbees.com. So it's just char at thehelperbees, and I'll be sure to reply.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you. Greatly appreciate you taking the time to spend with us, and let's revisit this down the road, because this is a constantly moving industry that you're in. And as I started the show, most of us will be impacted some way or another in this aging process. So thanks again, and appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Well, the only bad news today is that we're at the end of the show. So thanks for listening to the Business of Health podcast. Listening to this show puts your agency in position for success. Remember to click the link below. Check out my website at www.firststaffbenefits.com. Give me a shout. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Keep listening, keep learning, and keep taking action. Until next time, this is Mike Martins signing off.